Will you have a drink?
No, I'm toying with this one, thanks.
Well, drink it down, I'll buy you another.
Look, I'm flat broke and I can't afford to drink.
What's that going to do with that man? I said I'd buy you a drink. You don't have to buy me one. Now drink it down.
Hello and welcome to the Reprobate Podcast. My name is David Flint. Something slightly different today. We're going to talk to beer blogger Cooking Lager about the reopening of pubs in England, whether it's a good idea, a bad idea, what the experience of going to the pub for the first time in a few months was like. So stay tuned, crack open a beer, and enjoy yourself. So, Cookie, good afternoon. How are you doing?
Very well. Thanks for asking. Yourselves?
Not too bad, not too bad. So, you went to the pub on Saturday?
Indeed. I thought, being a risk-taking sort of gentleman, I would go out there and discover the bacchanalia of death to see whether Super Saturday was the chaos many had assumed it would be. It's difficult to know what to say to it other than, if that's what you were looking for, it was a bit of a disappointment. It was a calm, regular, normal afternoon out in a couple of pubs. Social distancing was observed. Felt entirely safe. And, had a couple of pints. Got a bit worse for wear. Had a nice afternoon out.
So it seems like a lot of people are genuinely disappointed that it's not ended in complete chaos. Just the seeking out of the handful of places they found in the country where it went bad.
Well, yeah. This is where I think it comes down to, and I know lots of people do just like to criticise what they refer to as the mainstream media, etc. But there is, to some extent in news, a requirement to fulfil narratives, I think. And I think a number of news outlets, if they set themselves a particular narrative, they particularly like to find the news which supports that narrative. So, and I'm sure they managed to find chaos and drunken disorderly behaviour. I think if you looked for it hard enough in many city centres, you would have found it. In the quiet sort of northern towns that surround northern cities, you'd have struggled to find that story. But if you went looking for it, I'm sure you probably did.
Yeah, it's reminiscent of, you know, when there was the panic, I guess, a decade or two decades ago, the kind of binge drinking paranoia where city centres and town centres were described as being war zones. And you'd look at that and think, hang on a minute, I live there. I've walked through that town centre on a Saturday night.
Yeah, I mean, I we've all been in a rough pub. I mean, I remember 10, 20 years ago going in the old rough pub. I remember one pub in particular, sitting having a drink with my then girlfriend, and then a glass flying past my the front of us, and it's smashing against the wall. And you know, I don't think we went on a date in there again. In truth, but that's but these type of experiences are the exception. It's not the day to day experience of drinking outdoors.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you can walk around any kind of busy city centre on a Friday or Saturday night, and if you hang around long enough with your camera, you'll find enough pictures of people passed out or throwing up or fighting. You know, it's not the norm. I mean,
you could probably think of it. I mean, if you were mathematically inclined, there's a normal distribution, couldn't you? It's there's a chunk of in the centre of normal type behaviour. There is at the outskirts extreme behaviour, and if you have a particular agenda in mind you wish to support, say a prohibitionist agenda, you go out and you find those instances where alcohol is a societal problem, and you highlight those problems in order to support what it is you're trying to do. If you want to give an honest view of Britain and British drinking culture, it's far more dull and boring than it is worth reporting on. It is in the main and regular normal people just enjoying a relaxing drink after the stresses and strains of a working week.
No, I mean, that's often the disappointment, isn't it? You build yourself up to expect some kind of wild night out, and then you just end up sat in the pub with a few pints.
Maybe I'm just missing out on something. Maybe there are Roman orgies in and around, and I've just always been unfortunate enough never to find them. I go in pubs and I find regular people, none of whom are particularly engaging in anything you consider to be dangerous. Or maybe all of this is going on and nobody has ever thought to invite me. All of the people organising these things, maybe they've never considered inviting me, or maybe they just... I'm the last person they would want to invite to such a thing. Maybe I should feel offended about that. Yeah, and maybe if people are listening to this podcast, I'd say if I want to invite me to such a thing that is bacchanalian and a Roman orgy, something which is utterly disgraceful, I'd love an invite. At least once in my life to see such a thing.
Yeah, you know, for research purposes.
Certainly. For being able to write a blog about it. And I might even say how disgusted I was about it. You never know.
Well, you made your excuses and left, as the tabloids used to say.
Yes, yes. Whenever they'd sort of set somebody up, usually with a fake shake costume. Offer them drugs, money, hookers, and then they make their excuses and leave.
Yeah, but they don't quite tell you at what point they made their excuses and left. Not only did you go out drinking on Saturday, but you went to the Spoon.
I absolutely love Wetherspoons, and I've long been a fan of the Spoons chain. And I know... there's numerous reasons why people want to boycott Wetherspoons. You have to respect other people's opinions. If you don't particularly want to have Brexit propaganda sort of thrown at you, I can understand why you might have been swerving them. And the response to this pandemic in terms of his staff wasn't immediately brilliant. I'm not going to say to defend Timbo. Telling all his staff to effectively bugger off and go and work at Tesco's, I don't think was the most sensitive approach to the employment concerns of his staff. As a pub chain of value drinks, I've been a patron of them for years, and I say in their favour. You know, people talk about the pub as being a place where everybody goes. Most pubs these days have a distinct clientele. They're quite defined in terms of the type of people that go in certain types of pub. Whereas Wetherspoons is the one sort of pub chain where you really do find everybody, all sort of social classes, all ages, all ethnicities. You see everybody down Spoons.
When I lived in Nottingham, we had four Spoons in the city centre, two of which were complete hellholes that you just wouldn't want to go in unless you had to, and two of which were really nice. And I think, you know, maybe that's it. Maybe it's a 50-50 split nationwide between really good ones and really bad ones, and people just focus on the bad ones.
I think any pub chain whereby its sort of USP is value drinks is going to suffer from two things. It's going to suffer from a bit of snobbery from what you might call the respectable classes not wishing to drink there. And it's going to be particularly appealing to maybe the rough end of pub custom, which, you know, let's be rude, let's call them scroats. Every town has a section of people who probably do behave themselves poorly and whatnot. And the cheapest pub in town is always going to be the pub that attracts that sort of people. And I think, to some extent, Wetherspoons probably do attract a clientele in some areas which drags the pub down, and in other areas, for whatever reason, they maintain a smart establishment.
Yeah, I guess you've got to work that thing out of where the cheapest pub that you're willing to go to in town is.
Yes, yeah. If Wetherspoons is the second cheapest pub in town, it will be actually quite a smart one. If it's the cheapest pub in town, you will find occasionally it needs bouncers to ask people to leave.
The four that I had that were all within 5 minutes of each other had different drink prices for each one. So you could get a drink cheaper if you walked down to the one 5 minutes down the road, which seemed kind of weird.
There's a peculiar aspect of Spoon's pricing, I think. I think he's worked out exactly how to be the cheapest in any particular given area. And so it's a managed chain rather than franchised, I think. I think everybody's a manager. And Wetherspoons normally own... Well, they either own or lease the pubs and install a management team in them. But I think the prices are nationally set against presumably a cost base and whatever they think the surrounding market will sustain. I think they actually do a lot of research into what their competing prices are and do actively undercut. They're a competitive chain. And I think that's one reason why a number of people dislike them, because I think there are a number of people who would prefer bars and pubs to be a cosy cartel, and they don't particularly want prize competition. And I think that comes from two sections. I think there are plenty of publicans who object to a Spoon's opening. But also, I think within drinking, you've got sort of two sort of streams of what you might call craft beer enthusiasts, another stream of camera traditionalists. all of whom would like a particular safe status quo maintained. And a disruptive economic force like price competition is a bit of a kick to that.
And I think also, you know, there's that, there has always been that argument that because spoons are generally so big, that they're like these giant soulless temples. But of course, you know, some of them are really nice buildings that just look great when you're inside them.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There are a fair number of soulless barns, though. I mean, it comes with, I think, the business model. Timbo himself credits, I think, is it the Walmart chairman, which the British equivalent would probably be, wasn't it Jack Cohen who started Tesco's and he piled it high and sold it cheap?
Yeah.
His model is high volume, low margin trading. And I think in order to do that in a pub environment, you need a large pub and you need fast turnover. And that's what keeps his prices low.
Now, there's that interesting thing that, obviously, I think we just touched on this a little earlier. There's that element of snobbery that the people who were going to boycott Wetherspoons are generally the people who would never go there in the first place anyway. So I'm sure that wasn't really a big threat to him, was it?
Certainly, yeah. Certainly, I mean, it's always surprised me how people view companies, because arguably Wetherspoons, like many companies, are engaged in activities which most people would consider to be poor. You know, whether it's the treatment of staff, probably not in a pub-based environment, but certainly at other retail establishments are selling cheap clothes, which we all know have been procured via poor working conditions abroad. And yet nobody seems to mind. People seem to still shop there. Probably in the pub-based environment like Wetherspoons, we all kind of know that the beer and the drinks have been made in exactly the same fashion as everywhere else. My understanding is the staff are paid above the minimum wage and have a career structure and benefits. Hospitality in general, I think, is not the best paid profession. And my impression has always been that actually Wetherspoons isn't one of the poor operators in this environment. You could probably find significant other hospitality operators for whom the deal with their staff was even worse.
And I think obviously he's set himself up as the pantomime villain, hasn't he? You know, starting with Brexit. I mean,
I don't know. If you're going to have a business though, Brexit is whatever your opinion on Brexit, you can be for or against it. But if you're running a business, politically speaking, I would call it the biggest divisive issue of my lifetime. To take not only such a strong side and then to use your business as a soapbox for it. You are going to divide customers. It's not the wisest thing to do business-wise, is it?
No.
It's okay. I would encourage anybody to engage in the political sphere. Many people do. I mean, I think, didn't the chap who used to own Sainsbury's, he was a strong supporter of the Labour Party and then the Liberal Democrats and the SDP at various times. But I don't think he ever pissed off his customers.
No, he probably didn't write about it in the Sainsbury's magazine.
Yes, I can fully understand why a significant number, why 48% of people in the country may not want to drink in an establishment where on every table was a magazine of Brexit propaganda.
Yeah.
I never actually saw any member of staff force them to read it. You can always just ignore it or throw it to the side.
I always found that magazine was, if somebody was waiting to get served at the bar who you were with, you just flick through it while you're waiting for your pint to arrive, and then as soon as they came back, just fling it aside again.
It's the weirdest corporate magazine, though. And half of it is propaganda. It's Timbo's political soapbox. Most of it with plagiarised articles from other magazines. And then you get into the section which is what you might call usual corporate gumph. It's about his products and his pubs, and there's lots of smiling photographs of his staff handing over checks to charity. And that's the second half of the magazine. The first half is Timbo's view of why Brexit's going to be the most wonderful thing economically for the country. And which is interesting to read. I mean, I enjoy politics. I do occasionally have a read of the politics half of the magazine, but Timbo's view seems to solely be based on the fact that he can import drinks and foods cheaper during Brexit, and what's good for the pub industry is good for the world.
Yeah, well, you know, if that's what you know, you just extrapolate it to everything else.
Absolutely, the country's better off with cheap Australian brandy.
Oh, there was because there was a thing when he was banning French drinks, wasn't he?
But yeah, he got rid of a lot of German. I really enjoy sort of German lagers. He got rid of a lot of Weiss.
Yeah.
I think he's kept Kronbacher. He's got one of his German lagers, but he's got rid of that. He's got rid of champagne. I think that's gone. But I don't want to be dismissive of Wetherspoons. I'm not sure whether champagne was his biggest selling product.
No.
I don't think I've ever seen anybody drink.
I think Strongbow Dark Fruits might have been more popular.
Yeah, possibly so, as the celebratory drink of choice in the spoon. So let's talk about your drinking experience at the weekend then, because you're like our guinea pig, I guess. You go to Wetherspoons. Which Wetherspoons did you go to?
I went to the Calvert's Court in Stockport. It is often referred to as a bit of a drinking barn. It is historically gone from being reasonably smart to occasionally tatty. In its current guise, it's been given a spruce up. Clearly the toilets have been rebuilt, the tables have been distanced, tables have been cleaned. It's probably the smartest I've ever seen it.
And so they've got the little plastic partitions?
Well, all the tables are partitioned with, I don't know, some sort of fake wood followed by perspex. Right. There seems to be perspex up and around the bar and liberally placed around the establishment. This sort of arrows on the floor. The famous spoons carpet have been adulterated by stickers telling you which direction to walk in. People seem to be observantly obeying the guidance or rules and behaving responsibly and sensibly. I know people, if somewhere is too narrow to walk down, people stop and give somebody the right of way so they can walk back to their table. Tables are partitioned off, so it operates very much like having individual booths.
Yeah, I mean, you think people are actually on very best behaviour at this point as well, because nobody wants to spoil it.
They could be. Also, I went there sort of what you might call early afternoon, probably maybe a little too early for people to get hammered. I could not tell you what it was like at throwing out time. I moved on by then. But I walked past it at throwing out time, and it did not appear to be a raucous, rough pub. Yeah. It appeared to be operating sensibly. It could be that next weekend, the weekend after, I might take a venture into the centre of Manchester and find absolutely the opposite of what I've so far witnessed. You can't tell.
I think actually, if you think about, say, the centre of Manchester, look at somewhere like the Northern Quarter, where there's so many bars on either side of the street, and if they're having outside drinking, it could easily end up like pictures we saw of Soho, where it's shoulder-to-shoulder people on the street.
I saw in the Manchester Evening News some photos where they pedestrianised some streets, and again, I think initially how it's worked is well-spaced tables, people sat outside. I mean, I think the problem with this part of the world, North England, is the weather does not lend itself to alfresco type of cafe society. We live in a world of perpetual drizzle up north.
It is kind of interesting to see the way that different kinds of pubs are reacting. I mean, I saw that you attempted to go to a Sam Smith's pub and failed.
Well, they don't appear to be open at this point, actually. I think maybe in and around your area they have. I'm hearing on the news that they've opened and racked their prices up, which...
Right.
I'm not sure, which I think might not be the decider in London, because I gather in London they are much more appreciated for being a brand of traditional pubs. In and around sort of the northwest of England, they are noted as being a cheap pub chain, frequented by largely older gentlemen who are essentially old retired gentlemen out for a cheap pint. And I'd be fascinated to see whether, if they have racked up their prices in and around the northwest Manchester area, that they retain that customer base. My guess would be that if a 2 quid pint of bitter suddenly becomes a 3 quid pint of bitter, there will be a queue of old men outside the Wetherspoons.
But it's interesting to think that, obviously, we talk about Tim Martin being a bit of a character, but he's a very traditional businessman compared to the guy who runs Sam Smith's. Yeah, I mean, I thought that maybe the reason that they hadn't opened up is because people had to try and order via an app that would violate his ban on mobile phones.
I think Humphrey's is a law unto himself, and I think people that tried to analyse his motivations, his attitudes, his business plan, I think are doomed to fail. I think you can look at Timbo's approach and see logic to it. Humphrey runs a private business, a private family business indeed, where I think it's him and possibly some relatives own the whole shareholding of the company. And I think they own largely the freeholds of their pubs, so they haven't leased pubs or renting them like maybe Wetherspoons are. And so I think that different capital structure creates an autonomy whereby it is Hump's fiefdom. He can do what he wants. And he's clearly a bit of an eccentric gentleman. The thing about Humph and Sam Smith's is, though, that all of the stories you read are secondhand. They come to you via Twitter, newspapers, and they tend to be skewed towards Humphrey having a very eccentric... He's walked into a pub, he's seen something, and he's closed the place down immediately and chucked everybody out on their arse. And it's amusing to read about, but until Humph walks into a pub I've sat in and I see it, you don't know. You don't know from what angle this is being reported. I'm not trying to defend it, but it sounds to be completely eccentric.
But yeah, I don't know. I quite like the idea of somebody who's just so completely in their own little mindset that they would walk into one of their own pubs and close it down immediately because somebody swore.
Well, I think this is the latest. I think a landlord effectively gives too much of an actual pint in a pint pot and the pub is closed. As you said, he goes to the bar and somebody swears and immediately the pub is shut down. And you know, as if nobody ever used the F word in a pub. I mean, you know, nobody likes people effing and jeffing continually, but you do find what you might call robust Anglo-Saxon in pubs. It's observably a feature of drinking.
Exactly.
But I one of the things I'd say in Hum's credit, though, is he has maintained a particular traditional type of pub. If you have any interest in tradition and traditional establishments, I don't think Sam Smiths have much changed throughout my entire lifetime. Maybe so. A pub historian would correct me, and maybe I'd tell me I'm talking bollocks. But I would get the impression that if you wanted to go into the same sort of pub your granddad went into, if you walked into a Sam Smith's, it would be the type of place your granddad would recognise as being a pub. The decor, the bar, the whole shebang. There's a television advert, isn't there? What tea used to be. I would suggest that Sam Smith's are what pubs used to be.
Yeah.
And if you appreciate that sort of tradition, there's something you would get out of a Sam Smith's.
No, I think you're right with that. I think there's that whole point where there's room for that. There's room for the proper old school pub. There's room for the modern pub. You know, we should be able to pick and choose what we want and go for where we feel the happiest, because that's essentially what it's about, isn't it? And it seems like everything that's against pub culture is quite often against people just having a good time.
Well, yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head there. It's hospitality, isn't it? And hospitality, in part, comes down to people feeling comfortable in an environment. And people can be comfortable in all sorts of different environments. Many people are comfortable primarily in environments which contain people like themselves, which is why you find all sorts of different types of pub which cater for different age groups, different social classes, different niches of the market. And these provide comfortable, safe spaces for people to enjoy a drink. If you like a particular type of pub, I think it's easy to be dismissive of others, simply on the grounds that may be something you don't like. But there ought to be room for everybody. There's room for all tastes.
As long as we don't have that situation where, you know, we only end up with one or two pubs in town and that's all there is to choose from, then not everything has to be for everybody, does it?
I've worked primarily in different cities across mainly the northwest of England and seen a number of towns. It's really, I would suggest, possibly small villages which are at that point whereby they've got one pub and it's struggling. And so you've only really got one choice of one thing. I would guess most towns have enough of a variety. You've got chain pubs like Wetherspoons. And to its credit, what I would say is a revitalisation of camera-style free houses, which should give you a range of cask and craft beers.
Yeah.
Manchester in particular has got a number of brewery taps, which seem to cater for sort of young millennials who want a third of overpriced craft beer. There's a myriad of ways of getting pissed. You don't always you don't have to sit amongst codgers in Sam Smith's.
No. But there is that weird cultural snobbery, and I think we saw some of that this weekend with pictures of old guys sat in pub with their pint of Carling and then being vigorously mocked on Twitter as just dreadful gammons and whatever else.
Oh, I saw one particular one from the Manchester Evening News, and to be fair,
that's the one I'm thinking of. Yeah.
There was none of that in their there was none of that in their original tweet, but the responses to it were utterly disgraceful for a working class gentleman who had I think he'd been tarmacking the roads all night, the night shift, come off his shift, and he was enjoying a cold pint of Carling in a pub, and the reaction to it, good God, let the man enjoy a pint. He seems to have worked for it.
It's the weird thing, you know, there seemed to be more condemnation of him sitting there with his couple of pints on a table than there was of all the people crammed into the Soho streets, which I guess, you know, tells us something.
I think there's a different value system, isn't there? You can see it across society. We've become stratified. I do think there's a significant cultural snobbery, particularly towards working class people these days. And I think I think the journalist Owen Jones wrote a book called Chavs a number of years ago, although you don't hear the word chav anymore, which he wrote some quite perceptive things about the demonization of the working classes. And that culture is, I think, still there, of comfortable Waitrose shoppers, I would suggest, who are very comfortable denigrating less well-educated, more hard-working but lower-earning people than themselves.
It's become the acceptable form of bigotry, hasn't it?
Yeah, I don't know. I could not tell you how this has come about. I remember when I was at university, all the middle class kids pretended to be working class. I'm not sure. It's 20 years since I've been at university, so I could not tell you now whether all the middle class kids are still pretending to be working class. But there was at least 20 years ago, I think, more of respect and veneration. Most of the music and culture came from a working class background. You had the bands which were popular were from. You know, those that were not from working class backgrounds pretended to be from working class backgrounds in order to have cultural credibility. You had middle class bands like Blur pretending to be working class in order to have some credibility. They weren't dismissing working class culture as being a bunch of ignorant chavs. You know, they were putting on Mockney accent to.
Although it seems like all the guys in Blur have reverted to type now.
Yeah, you can't make music forever. At some point, you've got to have a Kraft cheese farm or something. Whatever he's now doing, one of them, isn't it? Yeah, which is it's a bit of a. At least it's not a Kraft brewery. At least it's not set up his own Kraft brewery. He's making Kraft cheese. Good luck to him.
Yeah, just kind of getting back to the pubs opening again. I mean, I think the one thing that struck me as well was looking online is just this massive divide between the people who are absolutely against the pubs opening and then the people who are absolutely against anyone not going to the pubs. It seems like, you know,
how dare you not go to the pub?
it's gone to extremes again. This seems to be the current culture.
I think in some respects social media exasperates this, because especially sites like Twitter, they don't allow for nuance. They only allow for one particular opinion, and if you express that opinion strongly and in the most extreme way possible and shout it, you will win your argument. And so nuance is lost, whereas I'm sure there's a number of people who feel a genuine sense of apprehension about the world reopening. I would suggest those people are wrong, but I would not scream and shout it. I would not call those people bedwetters. I would just politely suggest to them that I have a different opinion and that I believe the world should reopen, that it is safe for the economy to restart. And I would suggest that all of those people who profess to care about things like the NHS probably ought to realise that public services are supported by a vibrant economy, that people need to work and earn a living in order to pay the taxes to support it. So we need in some way to restart the country, and we need to do so in a safe manner.
And there's that, there's that whole side of things as well. You know, the mental health toll of the lockdown is potentially much worse than anything that coronavirus can do.
I think so, actually. I do. I mean, my elderly father has been isolating. He was one of those people that got a letter off the government. And I can tell when I speak to him over the phone that it is a very difficult and isolating experience. Mm. I think I myself am a little more introverted, and therefore it hasn't been that challenging for myself. I actually quite like spending a day just reading a book on my own.
Yeah.
But I think there's plenty of people for whom the absence of regular social contact is a problem. And a drink over Zoom with friends is not the same thing. I'm sure a number of people have suffered. And I think the social lives of many young people have probably suffered. If you ask how young people meet, date, get to know each other, form friendships and relationships, I would suggest pubs play a big part in that. And shutting them for 3 months has probably impacted one certain section of society more than others, and negatively impacted them. But I would also be respectful towards older people for whom, I think if you are old and in bad health and you have underlying health conditions, you know what, you probably shouldn't be going out into a pub. You probably should still be looking on Twitter to see how it's going for everybody else before making the decision yourself. I'm of an age and in good health whereby I think I can confidently go out and it would be little danger for me.
Yeah, you could be the canary in the coal mine.
Yes, and I'm happy to be so. My personal opinion is I honestly think I've already had this virus. I think I got it before the world shut down. I was in an office where we were all joking about having the flu and joking about it being the coronavirus. But unfortunately, none of us have ever been tested, so I could not tell you whether it was or wasn't. I think I'm of an age and set of health whereby it would not be a problem if I were to catch it. But you never know. Maybe I'm wrong. Here's the thing, you see. I'm talking to you about going down the pub yesterday, but I think we should check in 2 weeks just for me to tell you that I've not died. You never know.
We've already kind of had the big social gathering experiments with the various processes, and that was, 3 weeks at least to go now? So
yeah.
So there doesn't...
No spike recorded, thankfully.
Yeah, so I think... if we're going to take any of that kind of thing as evidence, then we can say, well, okay, that's shown that it is potentially in remission. It's going away. It's not spreading. But yeah, I guess we just wait and see in a couple of weeks' time. And if everybody who went down to the pub is still alive and still drinking, then everybody else can come and join
absolutely.
Them in there.
I'm not the type of person that goes out protesting, really. I would have done it 20 years ago when I was at university, but I'm now the type of person who sort of watches it on TV. But I think we ought to be grateful for the fact that there hasn't been a spike. Many people predicted there would be one. Thankfully, there hasn't been. And I agree with you. I think that's if we can extrapolate that to other types of social gathering, then that ought to be a positive. It ought to give us confidence.
I mean, it feels like lockdown has kind of crumbled to a large degree anyway, and so we might as well just move towards a more organised way of getting back to normal.
I mean, I don't know what your own experience was where you are, but I would split the 3 months into three very distinct months. The first month, people obviously took it very seriously. You could see people going out for their once-a-day exercise and people crossing the road to avoid each other. You could see families going for the exercise together with two young children on small bikes, and they're all keeping together and considering it to be a serious thing. About a month later, you could see it breaking down. And I'm not having a pop here, but you could see visitors arriving at neighbours' houses. You could see people taking it less seriously in shops, everywhere else. Human nature has its limits of how long people can maintain these things, which is probably why statisticians want them to be timed carefully, because people can only do it for so long before they say bugger it.
I think people get complacent as well, don't they? If you've not been affected by something for a month,
it's an invisible virus, isn't it?
That's the funny thing. That's what my mum keeps saying. It's like, oh, you know, we can't even see this thing. It's like, well, of course not. You know, you can't see the flu. I'm not sure what she expected, some giant virus walking down the road swinging an axe or something.
Indeed. I would say thankfully my family, my family has been unaffected by it, touch wood. I have heard of friends that have been affected by it and been in hospital for it. So it's a real thing. It is out there. But you're right. I think if you've not personally touched by it, you can become complacent. I will see, I think, over the next few weeks in hospitality. What I noticed in the first weekend was absolute compliance to rules. Not just in Wellesmans. I went into a lovely sort of independently run pub that I'm quite fond of, what you might call a camera pub, with the type of independent pub with lots of different beers on. That pub had hand sanitizer, distancing between the bench seating. I think, like you said this earlier, we will see whether this is maintained in a fortnight's time, whether people decide to keep it going or whether people sort of shrug their shoulders and say, bollocks to it. I think probably we should keep it going.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's anything to be said for everything that we've gone through in the last few months is that it's not all negative. I think some of the things just culturally are actually quite good things to take forward regardless of coronavirus.
Go on, how do you mean? I'd love...
There's more of an emphasis, say, on personal hygiene than there has been. You've got people more concerned
certainly.
About...
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you're washing their hands. I mean, personally, I'm quite happy to have people maintaining a bit of distance, giving you a little bit of space rather than being shoulder to shoulder with people walking down the pavement all the time. That doesn't feel like a bad thing sometimes. And, you know, if you're on public transport, just being aware of people there coughing and spluttering, which in the past, and I'm sure we've all done it, you can get on a bus or a train and just be coughing a lung up.
Well, it's something I think we previously ignored, isn't it? But I'd agree with you on the hand washing. The idea that, I mean, as somebody who regularly enjoys pubs, the idea that my fellow patrons are more inclined to wash their hands after going to the gents does fill me with not just confidence, but the idea that we ought to maintain that as a standard. People washing their hands after having a slash.
Yeah, it's more that sense of a little bit of consideration for other people and watching out for each other. I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing to take away from this.
And I think we have noticed that. There are two types, because I noticed your magazine does also concentrate on what you might call retro movies and stuff. And if you look at those type of films, they portray something like this as, you know, the end of the world, as a time where society breaks down and people become selfish and they start fighting over the scarce resources. But what I think what we've seen is especially where in and around the suburbs of Manchester, I would say we've revitalized community spirit. People seem to be looking after their neighbours and being nice to each other. I have had three leaflets through my door inviting me to join a community group on WhatsApp.
All right.
and I haven't replied to any of them. Good God, no. But isn't that nice? But isn't that nice? Isn't that nice that my neighbours want me to join a WhatsApp group to get us through?
It's nice to be asked, but yeah, we had a similar thing, yeah, and it was like, good God, no.
Good Christ. No way. But yes, but it's lovely that three individual neighbours on this street have thought of doing that. That's wonderful.
Unless, of course, it means that, you know, you'll be singled out now as the bastard who wouldn't take part, and so you'll be looked at with suspicion.
Oh, they already think I'm sure I've been noted as the guy that never clapped for the NHS.
Well,
not that I don't particularly wish to clap for them. It was just that I forgot, on each occasion I forgot and noticed there was a racket outside, and by the time I went to look out of my window, they were the guy banging his pans had stopped, and so I didn't want to go out just at the end and give it one clap.
But then you'd be the one who was clapping longer than anybody else, so you'd be an even bigger hero.
I should have set myself a reminder for it, and actually got a drum kit. You know, I'd have beaten the guy with his pans, and I'd have got a drum kit on my driveway and played. That showed him I love the NHS more than he does.
It definitely seems to depend. The more noise you make, the guys in their cars beeping their horns and stuff, it's like, obviously you love the NHS more than the person who's just there clapping like a peasant. You know, they might as well be Boris Johnson.
Absolutely. It's an overused word, isn't it, virtue signalling? But there is. Mm-hmm. We have become a society whereby it seems to be more important to show people than to actually be something. But that's where we are.
I think so. So you'll be heading to the pub again next weekend, or in the week, I don't know. I mean, surely, as a beer blogger, surely you should be there every night.
Well, I'm a former beer blogger who basically decided that he would troll other beer blogs by commenting with nothing other than contrary opinions. So I do have an excuse not to go to the pub every night. But I probably will venture out at some point this week and have a couple of drinks, see how it's going. Maybe not a Wetherspoons, maybe try somewhere else. There's a number of pubs which I particularly like to pop my head round, and it'd be interesting to see how they've adjusted to the new format. And so there's a few places I'd like to check out over the next couple of weeks, just to see what's occurring, and have a drink.
Why not? Well, good luck.
Be rude not to.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for sharing your experiences with us.
Absolutely. It's been a pleasure, and thanks for inviting me.